You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Welcome everyone to Breaking Big Blue. I'm your host Jordan Ron on ESPN. ESPN.com Giants reporter. We're coming off a Thanksgiving loss to the Dallas Cowboys for the Giants. 28-20 was the final. Really the great back door cover. I did a little finger on the pulse bit where the pulse said it was going to be a close game. Everybody, you know, gave the Giants no shot. The pulse was right, at least for the first half. The Giants were winning at halftime. It kind of fell apart. They just didn't have enough. I think that's my main takeaway from that game on Thanksgiving, was that the Giants, especially with their injuries, just didn't have enough. You could tell against a good team. It just, they weren't going to be able to shut down that Cowboys offense and do enough offensively to win that game. Like they slapped it together for the first half, a lot like they've done this year. But eventually, Dallas was too good. They were better than the Waves, significantly better than the team the Giants put on the field. And the Giants made a couple mistakes. And they can't play their C game and overcome that against a good team like Dallas. And Dallas is a good team. Like they need to play their A game to overcome a team like Dallas. So we'll get into that a little bit. Talk about the huge matchup that now exists for this week. Really the first time in a long time I'm going to consider the Giants since 2016 in a real playoff-type atmosphere game against the Washington Commanders this week at MetLife Stadium. We'll get to that in a bit. We'll talk to our Commanders ESPN reporter, John Keim. I'll do a Giants After Dark, and then we'll wrap up with a quick Jordan on the beat. I'll tell you the sick menu that Jerry Jones put together for the media on Thanksgiving. At least made being away for Thanksgiving a little better. Just a little bit. Anyway, let's talk about what's upcoming for the Giants. Huge game against the Commanders. The way it's turning out right now, and I know people are panicking. I had somebody suggest to me that the Giants weren't going to win another game this year. I'm not going there yet. I'm not panicking to that degree. Yes, they lost to a better team in Dallas. They have a harder schedule down the stretch. Think about it. Two against the Commanders, two against the Eagles, one against the 9-2 Minnesota Vikings that's on the road, and then a game against Indianapolis, which, by the way, that's going to be the one game. They cannot afford to lose that game. So Giants get to 10 wins. They're going to be a lock to be in the playoffs. This is the way I look at it. So win three of those six. Split them. Lock. Win two of the six. Still have a chance. Washington has a tough schedule, especially if one of those two is against Washington. Split with Washington. Washington has a tough schedule. Seattle only has six wins right now. So they're going to need four out of their final six to get to 10. Now, granted, the Giants would lose that tiebreaker at 9 with Seattle. So that's the one that could be a little dangerous for the Giants, right? If they end up in 9 games and end up tied with Seattle. But still, 9 could get you in. It's no lock that Seattle's getting to 9 wins. Definitely not. I think they play San Francisco. They play the Jets. They have two against the Rams. Those are the two ones. They have to beat that Rams team, which is decimated right now, to have any chance really to get to 9. So I'm not panicking, and I don't think the Giants are in as bad a shape as many people believe. And, you know, there are people out there, like I said, somebody said to me, they're not winning another game this year. Well, I disagree with that. But this game this week against Washington is really big because you want one out of two against Washington, and obviously playing at home is an advantage. So you're more likely to win at home than they are on the road in what? 2 weeks down the road. They go Washington, Philadelphia, Washington. So, and if you lose this one, that's three in a row. You're really heading in the wrong direction. You don't want to go there. Makes this a really big game for the Giants. But part of the reason I'm not panicking about the Giants, yes, if they had the team that they put out in Dallas, they'd be in trouble. literally six starters who had started the previous week's game against the Lions were out against Dallas. Now you see the Giants getting healthier. You see Daniel Bellinger starting tight end. You see Evan Neal starting right tackle. You see center John Feliciano. You see Azeez Ojulari. Who else am I missing here? Left guard Ben Bredesen, Fabian Moreau, a cornerback, and their secondary is decimated right now. So having all these guys on the practice field this week, they're on the practice field in some shape or form. They're all on the field, trending towards a return. Tony Jefferson off the IR, designated for return, has a chance to return this week. That's a lot of guys. The Giants are on the verge of getting a lot of guys, a lot of key players back. You're talking about your right tackle, your center, and depending on how they play it out, if you know either Nick Gates starts at left guard, which seems probable or possible, I should say. You put it, but if Bredesen starts at left guard and Feliciano goes back to center, that's 3/5 of the offensive line is back. By the way, I kind of expect it to be Nick Gates at left guard. I think that's the way this seems to be trending, but there's some time left in the week. We'll see how that goes. But getting all these guys back. Now, Daniel Bellinger, rookie, not a great player, but he's a contributor. Obviously, getting him back to some degree helps. Same with Fabian Moreau. Clearly, not a shutdown number one cornerback, but you're replacing him with guys like Nick McCloud, Cordell Flott, who's a rookie. Who's the other guy? Re'Darius Williams, who's missed basically a year and a half with a knee injury. To get a veteran back who's played fairly well this year, it might not seem significant to people on the outside, but considering what you're replacing, to me, that is a plus. And the Giants didn't have that in Dallas. They were flat out outmanned. And eventually they wore down. In the second half, you could see them wear down. They just, okay. You know, Dallas, they had a couple plays in the first half where I noticed and I'm like, Dak just missed that throw. He overthrew that guy by a bit. That was really close to becoming a long run. And it was there. It's like, if the Giants allow them to stay close, eventually Dallas will be able to make those plays. The defense can't quite be as opportunistic as it has been in the past. And you've seen that recently, right? The better teams, the better offensive teams that they're playing, right? Seattle, Dallas, Detroit, okay? This Giants defense that was pulling off these miracles and so opportunistic, right? All of a sudden, they've allowed 27 or more points in three out of four games. I'm discounting the Texans game because that's almost like against a minor league team there. So you're seeing cracks in the Giants' defense, especially in that secondary. You know, it's hard for them to really consistently make stops if they're playing better quarterbacks and better offenses. And now Taylor Heinicke, not a great quarterback, certainly, for Washington, but he's played pretty well. He's proven to be serviceable. And Washington has some weapons. So the Giants have to get back to that formula that has worked for them. Run the ball early. I think they got away from that the last 2 weeks. Saying, oh, teams are stacking the box to stuff Saquon Barkley. So we're going to come out throwing, right, because the matchups are there. The matchups give us opportunities to hit some big plays early in the pass game. But I do think the Giants need to run the ball early, even if it's not successful, because we've seen it has paid dividends later on in games by them running it early. So I think it's important that they do that, especially here against Washington again. If they just let Washington rush the passer, the Giants are screwed. I don't care if every offensive lineman's available. Still not a great pass-protecting Giants offensive line. And this Washington front is good with potentially Chase Young coming back. You don't want to get in a position where you let John Allen, Deron Payne, Montez Sweat, and Chase Young get after the quarterback. Hey, just go rush the quarterback against this line. That would be trouble for the Giants. Have to avoid that. Let's talk more about this matchup with my boy, John Keim. On to the next one.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business. No matter what stage you're in, shopify.com/network.
We all know breakfast is an important part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any. You know what happens? You grab a cup of coffee and skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, and waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
All right, let's talk to our Commanders reporter, John Keim. Commander still sounds weird, by the way, John.
It sounds very weird to me.
I still have trouble getting through it and not using the R word, but even though they were the football team in between. But, I mean, winning two teams, winning record this late in the season, who would have expected it, John? You?
No. Well, and I will say this, like, I could have seen Washington because I thought they could win 9 or 10 games based on their schedule. And, you know, we talked about that earlier this summer about the schedule for this division, these four teams of the division. But I thought with Washington, their schedule, some of the guys are getting back, et cetera, that they could do that. And then they start off 1-4. So then it's like, well, no way do you see that. But I certainly did not see the Giants being 7-4 at this point.
Yeah, nobody did. But for the Washington perspective, like, what is it? Like, what is it, just Taylor Heinicke? Like, I mean, that's obviously the big change. No, it's not. So what is it then? What has been the difference for this team?
So Heinicke went in. They were 2-4, and Heinicke came in for Carson Wentz, broke his right ring finger. And he did – where he has helped is he has a little bit more – he has definitely more mobility, and early on he could make some plays because of that, make more plays in the pass game because of that. But he uses it – he can use his legs, so that helps. His familiarity with the offense has helped as well. So there have been throws that he's made out of trust with Terry McLaurin or Logan Thomas because he knows where they're going to be. He gets rid of the ball. You hit that plan step. The ball comes out. If it's not coming out, it could be a sack fumble within a split second. That's the difference. I think those are some things that he's made. The energy he brings has made a difference. But the biggest change is they finally remembered what their identity should be, and that's running the ball. And – you know, last year they went on a 4-game stretch. They ran the ball, controlled the clock. The defense played better. That's all happening now. Their defense is being very opportunistic. They're forcing takeaways. They lead the NFL in turnover margin over the last 7 weeks. That's been a big difference. But the run game, and that's with that part of that, that stems from the improvement of rookie Brian Robinson, the young man who was shot twice in August. He has recovered. You know, he was going to be a big part of their offense before he got shot. And then that delayed his return. He didn't come back till I think it was week. He missed the first 4 games. And then it's been a slow process of getting back. And last week, you started to see the guy that they really thought they had with the power that he runs with, the vision that he runs with. And I think that's made a difference. And it's helped the defense. The defense and the defensive line have played very well. So there's been that trickle-down effect. But it really starts with the commitment to the run game has made the biggest difference overall.
It sounds very familiar, right? I mean, think about it. The Giants, same thing. Opportunistic defense. Run the football. Don't make enough mistakes in the pass game. Now, the Washington does have Terry McLaurin, and that's a big difference. And you've seen it with Heinicke, like you mentioned. So the Giants are short at cornerback, right? Maybe they get Fabian Moreau back this week. But their number one cornerback, Adoree Jackson, is out. Does Washington, can you see Washington with how they're playing, just say, okay, let's just pound the ball to Terry McLaurin. Let's just get the ball to him. Let him make plays.
I can see them using the pass more, but if they're smart, they will stick with what they have because the one thing that, you know, and I can't see them taking advantage of that absolutely, whether it's with play action or coming out a little bit more aggressive than they have in some other games with the pass. And don't forget, it's not just McLaurin. It's Curtis Samuel can hurt teams with the pass. Logan Thomas, their tight end, is getting back to what he was. He had an ACL last year, and it took him a little bit of time to work his way back. And then Jahan Dotson, the rookie from Penn State, who has kind of been forgotten since he got hurt. He missed like 5 games or so, but he can still hurt teams. So they have guys that can still hurt you in addition to McLaurin. So I could see them being more aggressive through the air. The problem is that their formula right now really is rushing the ball, and the Giants have not shown that they're a great run defense. So I think you're going to still set it up that way, but maybe right. with the opportunity for more chunk plays. The hard part with Heinicke is every game, there's a couple throws where you just kind of scratch his head and say, I don't know how he got away with that one, but he did. And it could right. be a drop pick. And like the joke here is that there's like a horseshoe that he brings on the field with him. But so I think that might limit that. They know what their identity is, but I can see them being more successful in the pass game, maybe more so than aggressive with it.
Right. You could say it here. You know, the horseshoe's up his butt. You know, I get it. It's fine. yes, you can even say ass.
He's got a horseshoe. He may have two horseshoes up his ass.
So, okay. Is this the week that Chase Young finally gets back? I mean, every week I kind of hear, maybe this week. Hasn't played this year.
No.
Had the knee injury last year. Hasn't played this year. Is this the week? And if so, like, can he be a difference maker, or is it just like a slow integration?
I don't know if he'll play. They don't know if he'll play. He had a really good practice last Wednesday. They were very upbeat about that. And I think at that point, they started to think he was trending toward playing. But by the end of the week, he wasn't. He got sick. And I think they're still like, I think they want him to have 100% confidence in the knee. Ron Rivera said that the strength and conditioning coaches, the trainers have told him there's nothing more they can do. It's really about Young getting more confident in that knee and how he's using it. And you saw it last week more, even when we were out there watching it mm-hmm. and the way he went through some drills. But until they see that, they're not going to put him out there. So I could see him being out there this week, but if they don't know, I don't know. So I think we'll learn
more.
Full
disclosure, it's Tuesday. We're taping this right. on Tuesday. So it's early in the week. There's right. a long way to go here.
But when he does play Jordan, he would be limited to in that 12 to 15 snap range. So more of a situational guy. And, you know, who knows what he's going to look like. He could go in there. And it's funny because somebody asked him about this last week. He's like, you know, if that's enough for him to make an impact, it's like one play could make an impact. And he might be the guy that can make that play. And when you're facing athletic quarterbacks like Daniel Jones, they have Deshaun Watson coming up, that you want a guy that has his athleticism. So, mm-hmm. but one thing this group has done very well is play together on stunts, coordinated stunts or improvised stunts. And most of them do that pretty well. There's one guy, F.A. Obada, who tends to freelance a little bit more. He can right. be effectively freelance, but Young last year would freelance a little bit more. Will he fit into what they're doing well now? That's going to be a big key moving forward.
Who's the best guy on that defensive line right now? Is it Allen? John Allen?
John Allen, I would say is.
So he plays on the interior, right? So he'll correct. Match up against the guards, which they move him around, whichever and matchup is probably best for him.
They'll move him around, but he and Deron Payne are really good too. So they will move those guys, but not, you know, but that's like, and Deron Payne is, if John Allen is playing at an all pro level, Deron Payne is definitely at a Pro Bowl level. They both have 6.5 sacks. They both get, I think Allen still leads the NFL in tackles for a loss.
So but that's trouble for the Giants because their guards are not, their interior is not very good. That's the weakness of the line. You got, you know, Mark Lewinsky and then probably Ben Bredesen back at left guard. Those are areas that Washington could easily exploit there.
And that's their strength is right there.
Yeah, and so that'll be interesting. The Giants are going to have to play, probably move the pocket plenty against this Washington, which is obviously what they have to do against a lot of teams, especially you saw it the other day on Thanksgiving. All right, so 6 weeks left. They didn't have their bye. First of all, this is wild, John. I've never seen a team. They're going to play the Giants 2 games in a row.
Right.
I've never seen that in the NFL where you play the same team 2 weeks in a row. They have a bye in between. Am I the only one who thinks that's awkward?
No, I think it's very awkward. And I think it's hard for both teams because you're playing them. And it's hard for the Giants, because this team's going to play New York and then spend the next, you know, two weeks figuring out what went right or wrong and then making a game plan off that to face the same team where the Giants have to go out and play another game. These guys will get a chance to rest in between. Yeah. And so
Never thought about that.
But the hard part is, to beat, like, both these teams could really, really help themselves with a sweep, of course. And I think this is almost tailor-made for a split. And, you know, but But and
I think both teams would be happy with a split. No,
I think they would. I think they definitely would. And but it is it's a weird situation. It's weird to have the bye week so late. And as you know, as a reporter, it's really grueling to have a bye week so late, because I think we could all I think after what we've been
you needed your rest like 6 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think we needed a bye month more than a week.
Yeah. So, OK, what do you think? 10 is the magic number, right? You get to 10, you're going to make the playoffs.
I think 10 is a lock, right? Yeah,
I agree. 10 is a lock. Do you think why 9 is kind of like, okay, we're in decent shape. We'll see. You'll see how it plays out. It's a little bit of a crapshoot, maybe.
Right.
Do you see Washington realistically getting to 10?
I can see them getting to 9. I think 10, and the way they get to 9.
That's a no. That's a no. You don't. Well, you wouldn't predict, like, if you had to bet your life on it, you wouldn't bet on 10. You'd bet on 9.
Yes. And, but there's a clear, so the path to 9 for them is split with the Giants. And then they have Cleveland at home after the second Giants game. And we don't know where Deshaun Watson is going to be. And the funny thing is, like, quarterback hasn't been the Browns' issue. It's been their defense and the inability to stop the run. So it matches up well with what these guys want to do. So that's where you get the 9. And then you have to split with the Niners on the road, or Dallas in the home finale. And, you know, it depends. Then it's see the path to 10, Jordan.
What good chance Dallas has nothing to play for, though, John.
Well, we don't know. And if they do, then my money, you'd have to put
what
your money
on
Dallas.
What could they be playing for? I mean, unless they're going for the division, right? Or the
right.
NFC? Like, because
yeah, and unless it's a
there's a big gap between Dallas and the other wild card teams.
There
it's
is.
Not like they'll fold up down. Yeah.
Right. And so so that's the path to 10 is how Dallas handles the finale, assuming that their spot is already secure and they can't improve or hurt it. Then this team has a shot at 10, and that's where you get it. And then, of course, as you know, then it really depends on what does Seattle do? Because I think the Niners are really starting to play a lot better and taking control there. So what does Seattle do? And there's a realistic shot, of course, of all four NFC East teams making the playoffs 2 years after they all finished under 500.
That's crazy to think about. Yeah. Like, first of all, who predicted the Giants to make the playoffs? It's interesting because the Giants, you look at their, okay, how do they get to 10? I'm going to give them a split against Washington. I'll give him Indy since that's at home too, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
That gets him to 9. Yep. Now they're going to have to win a tough game to get to 10. Again, they play the Eagles in week, it's now week 18, not even 17, right? There's a week 18. Yeah, week 18.
Yeah.
But what is Philadelphia going to be playing for at that point?
Right.
It's possible that they're not playing for anything. Or could they sneak a win in Minnesota? I don't know. That's a tough game. Or the Eagles earlier, that's another tough game. So, yeah, that week 18 between Washington playing Dallas, who might not have anything to play for, and the Giants playing the Eagles, who might not have anything to play for, could be very, very interesting.
Yeah.
how that plays out.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and but it's there's a real path for both these teams making it, which would be kind of fun, because I think all of us who cover the NFC East would agree that this is always the most interesting division in football. And I think the NFL is a lot more fun when this division is good. And maybe that's just a bias from covering it for so long, but that's just how I feel.
They're four big, solid fan bases, though.
Yeah.
Markets, fan bases.
Popular
it definitely helps. I mean, look, the Giants aren't even an enticing team to watch these days that much, but Giants Cowboys on Thanksgiving drew the biggest, you know, rating like ever, basically.
Yes.
Like all combined. So yeah, that just goes to show you where we're at. John Keim, I'll see you on Sunday. And then a couple weeks later, we'll roll it back and do it again.
There you go. Good to talk to you, Jordan.
On to the next one.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash Fresh shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
All right, we're going to go back to the basics here. Your favorite portion of the podcast is the time where you ask me your deepest, darkest Giants questions in Giants After Dark. All right, we're going to do a quick five-pack here. Number one from Twitter, at NYGiantsNews26. What are you hearing from your sources about OBJ? Like, they wouldn't bring him in for a two-day visit for nothing, would they? Well, first of all, the two-day visit thing, usually, guys, that's kind of like the norm when a person does a visit. It's not necessarily a two-day visit. Like, you come in the first night, maybe you get dinner. This is at least what they do for draft prospects. You come in the night before, you have dinner with, like, let's say the wide receiver coach, the GM, whatever. In this case, who knows? Could be anybody. Ownership is going to be probably part of this as well. And then you actually do the visit and the physical and those kind of things in the facility the next day. So I think that's probably what we're talking about here. Now, what I've heard is that the Giants are going to go through the process with Odell. Like, they're interested. Now, I don't know if that necessarily means they're willing to pay him. I think I have my reservations about that. Think about it. Considering the approach that Joe Shane has taken this year, all of a sudden, do we think he's going to open his wallet after being extremely disciplined financially to the point where they haven't signed anybody aside from the veteran minimum this year because they're trying to get their cap in order and be in healthy shape moving forward? Is he all of a sudden going to open the wallet for a 30-year-old off two ACL injuries? Seems a little shaky to me now. The one thing I've heard, and this is from someone I trust, is that the favorite is the Cowboys, right? So you got to figure the Giants, like, they're in the running because they are bringing him in. Like you said, they're not doing it for no reason. But I would be a little bit surprised if they are willing to pay him what they want. So that's what I've heard so far on Odell Beckham Jr., visiting this week. We'll see how that turns out. Bills and Cowboys up next. Question number two, at Wander_Bread. Assuming Bredesen and Neal are healthy, along with all the other options outside of Lemieux, Shane Lemieux's toe injury is going to keep him sidelined. What is your thought on the best offensive line configuration going forward? Yeah, as long if you told me Bredesen was fully healthy and back in full shape, it would probably be Gates, and Gates is, you know, getting back to form. It would probably be Gates at center and Bredesen at left guard. But right now, obviously Andrew Thomas at left tackle, Glowinski at right guard. They paid him to be there. He's going to be there. And Evan Neal at right tackle. Now, I don't think they're going to go that route. It sounds like they're going to go Gates at left guard right now. But remember, also, Bredesen's coming back. He just had 4 weeks out, right? More than that, actually. He was on IR for 4 weeks. I think he was out a game or two before that. So you're talking about a guy who's missed 4 to 6 weeks with a knee injury. So I think right now the best solution might be put Feliciano back at center, get Gates at left guard. It's not like I totally disagree with that. I think that's a terrible idea because there is value to having Feliciano at center. He knows the offense. He helps them get in and out of stuff. He's a veteran. He's a scrappy guy. I think there's a benefit to having his leadership at center. I know Nick Gates is a leader and he's a captain. At the same time, he's not quite as familiar with this offense as John Feliciano. So, question number three, at Mike J. Esp _. So it's Mike Espinoza. How's your relationship with Daboll? I watch all the press conferences. Seems like he enjoys busting your balls, LOL. Yeah, I think that's fair. I think we have a very friendly, amicable relationship. But, yeah, he does like busting my balls. I will say that we saw a crack on Brian Daboll after the game on, what was that, Thursday. Right, my days are so thrown off right now because of that Thanksgiving game. But we saw a little crack in that. You know, we see the Brian Daboll we see on the sideline. I mean, he's crazy, right? We've seen it multiple times. He's yelling at everybody, going nuts. Officials, players, just celebration. You know, he gets jacked. Now, he was pissed after the game on Thursday to the point where he wasn't answering any questions, basically. It was all like one word. No. Yes. What happened? Can't happen. You know, why was there 10 men in the field? Can't happen. What happened? Can't happen. And like, you know, he's a head coach in the NFL. You can't just go up there and not answer every question. So I started pushing him a little bit. And you saw he gave me some daggers there. So the cracks started to show a little bit. But I'd say our relationship so far has been pretty positive. Next question. Vivek Sundaram _NYG says, any status update on Xavier McKinney? Yeah, I put this out on Tuesday. I asked McKinney, I said, hey, you want to give us any sort of real update on how you're doing or whatever? He said, not now. I said, well, are you willing to say if you expect to come back this season? Because last time we spoke to you, you said you weren't really sure. And he said, yeah, he did expect to come back. So that's where we're at on Xavier McKinney. Now, he had something in his hand, like almost above his knuckle, almost like yellow. It almost looked like a yellow from a distance brass knuckle, but it might have been like some sort of like pins in his hand, fingers, something like that. He was going in the shower, so he had the wrap. There was no wrap. There was no, I think he still wears the hard cast over it, the hard plastic case over it, that cast that you could take on and off. But he was going in the shower, so I think he had that off. But anyway, it seems like he's making progress. It's obviously multiple fingers, so I think that's why. And it almost looked like it was more his hand than just necessarily the fingers. And I think that's probably why it's a lot harder. You can't just throw on the cast and play through it. Plus, he had surgery. So, Michael Rosati, MRosati11, says, did you get the sense from guys this week that the pressure is on? The season starts now, that's in quotes, makes you want to run through a wall but could make some players feel the pressure, especially in New York. As I said before, yeah, I think the pressure's starting to build up a little bit. You saw Daboll after the game the other day against Dallas completely ticked off. His reasoning was that they had some missed opportunities, which don't disagree with at all. Did have some missed opportunities in that game. The illegal man downfield was an absolute killer. You know, the missed sack by Thibodeau, I think, was huge at the beginning of the third quarter. To me, that turned the game. Would have been second play from scrimmage. Dallas gets basically nothing on first down, maybe even through an incompletion. Thibodeau has a sack for like 6 or 8 yards, misses Dak, right? Instead of third and 16 or third and 18, you know, Dak runs for 6. They get a first down, and the next thing you know, it's a 15-play, 75-yard drive. Honestly, I know Thibodeau played really well in that second half. But you got to get some sacks. That was, to me, the biggest play of the game is his missed sack at the beginning of the third quarter. So, now they're talking about, all of a sudden, all season, they're talking about, worry about this week, this week, this week. We're only worried about now. We're not looking ahead. All of a sudden, Brian Daboll says, this is what we play for. You know, this is the stretch. This is when it matters. This is what, you know, what we set ourselves up for. So now, all of a sudden, they're thinking big picture. Okay, everything's in front of us in December. /January, and we're still in November. I'm taping this in November, but still, it's a change. It's a change of tone a little bit. So I do think the pressure is starting to build on them. They understand. Hey, things getting serious now. This game against Washington is legit huge, huge game for this team. Like, they have to win this game. I wouldn't say it's a must win, but they're in trouble if they don't win this game. Then the pressure really builds that second matchup in 2 weeks. From Justin Panic from Talking Giants, final question here, number 5. How has it been, maybe question number 6 actually, how has it been being back in the locker room this year? Are reporters able to build the same connections with players like they did pre-2020? And I like this question because I thought it was interesting. It made me think. yeah, you know, it is such a huge benefit. And I don't know if you guys as fans, you know, can realize it, but you're consuming better information. You're consuming more accurate information. There's just more that you know by being in the locker room, by talking to guys, by having those relationships. You're back in the locker room for the same amount. It's pretty much, not much has changed. The only thing that really has changed, and this kind of had changed beforehand, before the pandemic anyway, is that there's no Monday access. Is that that's via Zoom. So Monday press conferences are kind of Zoom. But that was kind of heading that way. It was teleconference before the pandemic. But it was kind of heading towards non-in-person on Mondays, day after game anyway. But yeah, you're getting time to create relationships with players, to talk to them personally so you can get their stories, so you know what they're about. And then in turn, you know, we are able as reporters, at least I'm talking for me personally, I'm able to get more information. Like, I know what's going on better. Like, let's say I know who's going to start on the offensive line this week. It's Tuesday when I tape this. But I already know pretty much who's going to start. Now, I want to see how the week plays out. Things can always change. But these are the benefits of being in the locker room. So, yeah, it's been nice, and it's certainly been refreshing. On to the next one. All right, going to wrap here with a quick Jordan on the beat. This is the portion of the episode where I tell you what it's like to cover the Giants, work for ESPN, or cover the NFL in general. Let me tell you, Thanksgiving in Dallas, well, not ideal because you're away from your family. And, you know, it's a family holiday. I'd love to sit there like you guys and watch TV and watch the football on TV all day and sit on the couch and eat, kick your feet up. Didn't happen this year. Now, the flip side is because you work on Thursday, I'm back on Friday, is that you get the weekend off, which is a rare weekend off. Think about that. So I got to sit back, kick it up, kick the feet up, and watch Sunday football, which was sick. But while you're there in Dallas, AT&T Stadium, Jerry's World, you get a pretty good meal. He hooked it up. Okay, let me lay this out. So you walk in. First of all, they got, you know, soda machines, you know, where you get your cup and you just could pick your soda. They got a iced tea pitcher on the side. So a lot of options for drinks. But then you go there, they got the carving station. All right, it was some kind of ribeye carving station. So you start out with that. Then you go over to the main row of trays of food. I mean, you got all the Thanksgiving stuff, all the staples. You got your turkey. You got your ham, you got your mac and cheese, you got your stuffing, you got your green bean casserole, which I kind of really like. You got a couple salads, mashed potatoes, you name it. So a solid assortment of Thanksgiving staples right there, and good food. I mean, whoever caters the Dallas Cowboys food, it's good. Now, let me tell you, the Dallas food is dynamite in the first place. The best in the league, in my opinion, or at least top three. Easy. So, Thanksgiving, they only step it up a little bit. And then you got a dessert table, right? The dessert table's got, like, little mini desserts, almost like a Vietnamese table at, like, a, you know, event with all different options. There's actually bags of popcorn there, too. But, I mean, you're talking, like, a little apple pies, a little pecan pie, a little some kind of chocolate mousse, you know, just five or six dynamite Thanksgiving choices there. Unlimited. You can just go back and pick at it as much as you want. And then, like, a candy dispensary, which was, like, kind of like, it's a big plastic machine. I guess it's not really a machine. It's just a dispensary with, like, five different tubes. Right, has the Dallas Cowboys star on it. And just in there, you could, you know, just pull out. They're all wrapped individual Reese's, taffy, the little Sunkist fruit snacks, little, like, circular jelly fruit snacks. I think you know what I'm talking about. Tootsie Rolls. And you just can go by all day. Just take, you know, put some in your pocket, you know, grab a handful of whatever Reese, little individual wrapped Reese's, put them in your pocket. I mean, eat a couple here and there. You know, we were pounding the Sunkist fruit jellies like they were nothing. So overall, pretty darn good spread they give you. And this isn't, trust me, this isn't the norm. I mean, it's the norm in Dallas, but this isn't the norm of what a spread looks like at most stadiums. It's not what it looks like at MetLife Stadium. Trust me on that one. MetLife is probably in the bottom half of the league in regards to food. Now, the omelet station is the best part of the MetLife food, especially for the only for the 1 o'clock games. The omelet station is really is good. Omelet station is dynamite. But everything else, you know, not at Dallas standards, trust me. And then after the game in Dallas, this is always a staple too. This is a normal thing. They have the tap, the beer tap. You fill up a little cup, have a little beer with some local beer there with like some pistol gun, like as the logo, you know, real Texas style. And yeah, they treat you well there. Jerry coming through. That's it for this episode of Breaking Big Blue. As always, like, subscribe, tell your friends. You want the inside information on the Giants? Breaking Big Blue is where you go. I'm Jordan Ronan. You listen to Breaking Big Blue. See you next time.